Hey everyone, welcome back. We're doing a deep dive today into the reign of King Ahaz, and this guy's story is something else, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
We're looking at some excerpts from a lecture by Dr. John Oswald. He's a scholar of the Book of Kings in the Bible. And you might not know much about Ahaz off the top of your head, but he ruled the kingdom of Judah for 20 years.
Right.
That's a pretty long time.
Yeah.
But the Bible actually gives him less space than it gives to his father, Uzziah, who ruled even longer.
Interesting.
That's kind of weird, right? What makes Ahaz's story so different, so, noteworthy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it really gets at why Ahaz is such a fascinating and tragic figure. You see, he inherited a kingdom that was like on the verge of collapse. There were two kings from the north, Pekah and Rezin, who were threatening to wipe out the Davidic dynasty.
Whoa, huh?
You know, that's the line of kings going all the way back to King David. And they wanted to replace Ahaz and his father, Jotham, with a puppet king, basically end Judah's independence.
Wow. A hostile takeover. It sounds like Ahaz was in a really tough spot. Did all this pressure, did it have anything to do with why he ended up ruling alongside his father? Dr. Oswald said something about a co-regency.
Yeah, exactly. The source points out that this shared rule was unusual in Judah, and it probably happened because of that extreme threat they were facing. Imagine the fear of the royal court. You know, the whispers of doom. The prophet Isaiah describes it. The house of David is trembling like trees shaking in the wind because of this threat.
Wow. You can almost feel the weight of that fear on Ahaz.
Right.
So, in this terrifying situation, what does Ahaz do? Does he turn to God for help, lean on his faith, to guide him through this crisis?
Unfortunately, no. Instead of seeking divine guidance, Ahaz makes a series of choices that, well, let's just say they go against everything his ancestors stood for. He turns away from the God of Israel and he embraces pagan practices, including, and this is tough to talk about, child sacrifice.
Child sacrifice. That's incredibly disturbing. And Dr. Oswald pointed out that Ahaz wasn't just dabbling in these practices. He went all in on idol worship, especially at those high places. Those had a long and complicated history in Judah, right? Even some of the quote-unquote good kings used them for worship.
Right, you're absolutely right. Those high places were this constant source of tension. They were like a religious gray area. Some kings, they tried to centralize worship in Jerusalem at the temple, seeing the outlying shrines as a threat to their faith. Others weren't so concerned, they even used them for their own religious practices. But with Ahaz, we see this deliberate, full-blown revival of idol worship at these sites. It's a clear rejection of the God who had always delivered his ancestors.
Dr. Oswald makes a pretty bold comparison here. He says Ahaz turning to paganism is like if the United States, like in some huge crisis, rejected God's help and turned to other solutions. What do you think he means by that?
That is a really profound point. I mean, it's easy to look back at Ahaz and judge his choices, but how often do we do the same thing today? You know, we face challenges, anxieties, fears, and instead of turning to our faith, we turn to those other solutions.
Right.
Things like self-reliance or material possessions or political ideologies or even just burying our heads in the sand and hoping the problem disappears. We put our trust in things that can't deliver true peace or security.
It's like we're building our own little altars to those other solutions and putting them at the center of our lives instead of God.
Exactly. And that's where the real danger lies. We can become so fixated on these substitutes for faith that we lose sight of what really matters.
So Ahaz, he's facing this immense pressure, making questionable choices.
Well,
What happens next? Does he manage to keep his kingdom?
this is where Ahaz's story takes another dramatic turn. Instead of relying on God, he decides to make an alliance with Assyria, the superpower of the ancient Near East.
Oh boy.
Think of it like, you know, a small store making a deal with a giant corporation. They might get some short-term benefits, but ultimately they're going to get swallowed up.
And that's what happens, right? Dr. Oswald quotes 2 Kings 16:7. Ahaz basically begs the Assyrian king, Tiglath-Pileser, to come save him, even offers some treasures from the temple and the royal palace. It seems a little desperate, doesn't it?
Desperate is putting it mildly. It's like a mouse being chased by a cat, and it calls in a lion for help. Sure, the lion might scare off the cat, but now you've got a way bigger predator to worry about. And the crazy thing is, Tiglath-Pileser was probably already planning to conquer those areas.
Oh, wow.
Ahaz basically paid a king's ransom for something that was going to happen anyway.
Talk about a bad deal.
Yeah.
But didn't the prophet Isaiah warn Ahaz about this alliance? Dr. Oswald mentioned something about Isaiah offering Ahaz a sign from God, and Ahaz refused.
You're right. It's a key moment in the story. Isaiah, speaking for God, urges Ahaz to trust in God's protection, not in foreign alliances. He even offers Ahaz a sign, anything he wants, to prove God's faithfulness. But Ahaz, hiding behind this facade of piety, refuses. He says he doesn't want to test God, but you can tell he's already made up his mind. He's putting his faith in Assyrian chariots and soldiers, not in the God of his ancestors.
Wow. It's such a powerful picture of misplaced trust. It makes you wonder, did Ahaz even stop to think about the consequences of making a deal with a pagan king, someone who worshipped totally different gods? Did you really think that was going to end well?
It's a good question, and it leads to another fascinating and kind of disturbing chapter in Ahaz's story.
Okay, you've got me on the edge of my seat now. What happens next?
Well, after Tiglath-Pileser captures Damascus, Ahaz goes to meet him. And that's where he sees something that completely captivates him. An altar.
An altar? Why would an altar be so fascinating?
Well, that's where things get really interesting, and it tells us a lot about what Ahaz is thinking at this point.
So Ahaz, he's in Damascus, and he gets fixated on this altar. What was so special about this altar that he, like, became obsessed with it?
Well, remember, Ahaz was already kind of prone to looking for solutions outside of his own faith.
Right.
He turned to pagan practices, yeah, made that alliance with this powerful pagan king.
Right, right.
It's like he was desperately searching for, like, a formula for success, a way to guarantee his kingdom's future. And seeing Assyria's military power up close and personal, he might have concluded that their religious practices were the key. Almost like he was thinking, if they're winning, their gods must be stronger.
So he sees this altar and thinks, aha, this is the secret weapon. Like, he's trying to import their success by copying their rituals. Is that what Dr. Oswalt is saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The source calls it ritualistic magic, this idea that if you just do the right things, you know, say the right words, offer the right sacrifices, you can somehow manipulate God and get what you want. It's a totally transactional view of faith, focused on outward actions and rituals instead of a real heart connection with God.
Oh, it reminds me of those life hack articles you see online promising these quick and easy solutions to complicated problems, like do these 5 things and you'll be rich and successful.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And just like those life hacks often fail to deliver, Ahaz's attempt to, like, copy the Assyrian altar totally backfires.
Okay, but what does he actually do? Does he steal the altar? Try to buy it? What's the story?
He does something even weirder. He sends detailed plans of the altar back to Uriah the priest in Jerusalem with instructions to build an exact replica in the temple.
Wait a minute. He replaces the altar in the temple, the central place of worship, with a copy of a pagan altar. What in the world was he thinking?
It is a baffling move, isn't it? Dr. Oswalt suggests that Ahaz was so focused on the outward form, you know, on copying what he saw as a successful ritual, that he completely missed the point. He was so desperate to find a quick fix, a way to guarantee his own safety and success, that he lost sight of what faith is really about.
It's like mistaking the map for the territory. He saw the altar as a symbol of Assyrian power, but he didn't understand, like, the deeper principles, the heart connection with God, you know, that true faith requires.
Exactly. And that brings us to this really crucial point that Dr. Oswalt emphasizes throughout his lecture, the importance of the heart in worship. It's not about just going through the motions, performing the right rituals, or offering the most impressive sacrifices. It's about having a transformed heart, a heart that's aligned with God's will, a heart that's motivated by genuine love and devotion.
So it's not just about what we do, but why we do it. Our actions should flow from a place of real faith, not a desire to manipulate God or get something from him.
Exactly. And that's where Ahaz went so wrong. He was so focused on manipulating God, on finding this, like, shortcut to success, that he missed the whole point of true worship.
It's a powerful lesson for us today, you know. We can get so caught up in the externals of faith, the rituals, the traditions, the appearances, that we forget about the inner transformation that should be at the heart of it all.
Absolutely. And that's something Dr. Oswalt explores even further as he looks at the significance of temples and their construction in the Book of Kings.
So Ahaz, he puts this replica of a pagan altar right in the temple. You got to wonder what the people thought about that. It's like a huge rejection of their own traditions, right?
Yeah, it definitely didn't go unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Oswalt says that this really shows how Ahaz understood faith. Or maybe misunderstood it. He thought it was all about outward actions.
Yeah.
Doing the right things to get the results he wanted.
It's like he thought he could bargain with God, even manipulate him. Like, if I offer sacrifices on this altar, maybe the Assyrian gods will be on my side too. It's so different from that idea of, you know, a relationship built on trust and obedience that you see with some other kings and kings.
Right. And that takes us back to this important theme. outward actions versus real heart change. Dr. Oswald points out that the Bible, especially Kings, has all these stories of kings building temples or renovating them, doing religious reforms, making big sacrifices. But the Bible doesn't just say good job, it looks at the reasons behind it all.
So it matters why you do things, not just what you do.
Exactly. A fancy temple or a huge sacrifice doesn't mean anything if it's not coming from a place of love for God and wanting to follow Him. It's like giving a gift, you know? You could give someone something super expensive, but if you just did it because you had to or to show off, it wouldn't mean much.
No, definitely not. It's the thought that counts, the real love and care behind it.
Yeah. And it's the same with God. He doesn't care about outward show or empty rituals. He wants a heart that's totally devoted to Him, a heart that wants to know Him and do what He wants.
So how do we get that kind of heart? Is it enough to just have good intentions?
Well, Dr. Oswald doesn't give a simple how-to guide, but he does point to some things from the Bible, like praying, studying the Bible, and being part of a church community that can, you know, support you and challenge you.
It's about being intentional, growing your relationship with God instead of just doing the bare minimum.
Yeah, and it often takes sacrifice. It might mean giving up stuff you like or your own plans and goals to do what God wants.
Like surrender, admitting that you're not really in control, that there's something bigger that knows better.
That's a good way to put it. And I think that's what Ahaz struggled with. He wanted to be in charge, to save his kingdom himself. He never really let God lead.
And in the end, trying to control everything backfired. He lost his freedom, his kingdom suffered. He didn't get what he wanted at all.
Exactly. It shows what happens when you put your trust in the wrong place and when you try to play God. And it reminds us that real success, real security, comes from following God's plan and trusting Him.
So if Ahaz shows us what not to do, what about the kings who did get it right? The ones who, you know, built altars that honored God?
Good question. And that brings us to the heart of what Dr. Oswald is saying. He wants us to see that real faith isn't about rules or rituals. It's about a changed heart, a heart full of love, thankfulness, and a desire to help others.
And that change will show up in how we live, in the, you know, the altars we build, so to speak.
Yeah, our lives should show our faith, not just be a performance or a way to show off. We should be building altars of service, generosity, compassion, justice. That's what really honors God and shows others His love.
So as we finish up this deep dive into Ahaz, what's the main thing you want listeners to remember? What's the challenge Dr. Oswald gives us?
I think the challenge is to look at our own hearts. Ask ourselves, what kind of altars am I building? Am I trying to control God or am I trying to follow Him? Am I building on self-reliance or am I building on trust and surrender?
It's a big question, and we each have to figure it out for ourselves. Ahaz shows us that trusting the wrong things leads to ruin. But real faith, the kind that comes from a changed heart that leads to life, real purpose, and a legacy that lasts. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We hope this gave you something to think about and maybe inspired you to build the right kind of altars in your own life. We'll see you next week for another deep dive into history, faith, and culture. Until then, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep digging deep.